Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Action Park Media.
Hi, I'm Ethan Suplee. Welcome to American Glutton. Outside of acting, my two favorite things to do are diet and eat. I have a very complicated relationship with food, and on this podcast, we're going to talk about all of it. Food as entertainment, food as sport, food as fuel. I'll talk to experts and the average person, just like you and me.
I hate to ask you to do anything, but if you're enjoying the show, please take a moment to like, subscribe, rate, review, all of the above on whatever app you're getting it from. Making his third appearance on American Glutton, one of the most knowledgeable people on diet and exercise that I know, Dr. Spencer Nadolski, the meme doctor himself. We've talked about the topic of maintenance on this show, but I go deep with him and hear his expertise. You can find him on Instagram at Dr. Nadolski. Dr. Spencer Nadolski, welcome back to the American Glutton podcast.
The third time. This is the third.
This is the third time. You are our second most recurring guest after Mike Isratel.
Screw him. Screw yeah. Dr. Mike.
We're going to beat him. We're going to beat him. He's moving very far away to Michigan, and you and I live in the same state. So
I'm moving to North Carolina in August, though, so jeez, we better hang out before.
Why?
Wife's a Navy doctor, so
okay. All
yeah.
right,
yeah, they force us. To get too deep. I don't have a choice.
Yeah, San Diego, big Navy, and now the Carolinas are, yeah, big Navy towns. Is she going to be a doctor to the Navy SEALs?
No, she's a baby doctor. She takes care of the SEALs' babies, basically.
Oh, that's cool. That's still sounds classified.
Yeah,
as long as some aspect of her job is classified, that's pretty cool.
That's right.
Okay. I want to talk to you about maintenance. And I think it's one thing that it's fine that I am personally a big advocate for maintenance. And the way that it has kind of magically changed my life, I'm very, very happy with. But that said, I'm not a doctor. And so I want to get into some specifics with you. About the process of maintenance, when people should be doing maintenance, because I talk to people who have been doing a diet and are like, I've lost 100 pounds and it's now grinding. What do I do? And I'm like, do maintenance, dude. And they're like, no, I just want to get through this.
Right.
And so there's a lot going on there. There's a real, you know, I mean, you handle this. This is your practice. So I'm sure you see it a lot. It's very counterintuitive to what somebody who finally wakes up and goes like, I'm done, I'm going to make a change. And then you go, okay, the first thing, or, you know, the second thing, or wherever you throw maintenance in as a baseline, is we're going to take a moment of just maintaining our weight. This is like, what?
Yeah. Yeah, it's there's a psychological component, of course, the physiologic component that may partially drive that psychological component too. But yeah, people, you know, whatever their goal was, if they have a lot of weight to lose, like in your case, they get to a point where they're losing, and they're used to losing for a long period of time to where it feels weird to not try to lose more weight, right? I mean, if you can explain your experience, that's the psychological component that I hear from my patients. They're like, this is weird. This is not, I don't feel right. I need to keep going.
Checking the scale on maintenance is a disappointment no matter what the scale does. If the scale goes down, I'm disappointed. If the scale goes up, I'm tragically disappointed. And if the scale stays the same, I'm disappointed. And my intention, you know, my actions and what I'm telling myself I want to happen is the scale to stay the same. There's so much to kind of work through, and it did take a long time and a couple of maintenance periods. And then it actually took Jared Feather, who started programming me. And this was after I'd been kind of doing that for a while, but I was having a tough time getting under 10% body fat. And he took over. He was like, I'm going to write your plan. And the first thing he did was he basically stopped me from counting calories. Mm-hmm. He put me on a plan where it was like, here's what your meals should look like. You're going to have four meals and you're going to have this many ounces of protein, and it can be any lean protein you want. And at first I was like, but I don't know how many calories that is. And he was like, that's okay. And yeah, this was very hard for me, 'cause I was like, no, I'm adding up all the fat in my chicken breast and counting that as my total. Yeah. And he said, no, you're not going to do that anymore. And then it took like a year of me doing that to where now today, maintenance, I'm not thinking about anything really. And it's fun. And I'm like, oh my God, I'm a human being. I'm a real guy, which is also so weird, but I still don't want to see a static number on the scale. Like I want to, and I don't at the same time.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, you know, it's similar to like strength training. You're seeing your numbers going up. You're getting PRs, you know, with the scale, with the patients, people losing weight. They're like, oh, I lost another pound this week. Good. So now all of a sudden you shift the goal to, yeah, you want to keep within that 5 pound or so range, you know, 5 to 10 pounds, whatever, but in general, about 5 pounds or so. And that psychological, you don't see those wins, but the win is, like you said, is keeping it the same.
Right.
So it is quite a trick. Again, like the biggest thing for me is with patients, they're kind of on this dieting wheel. There gets to be a point where they're not losing weight anyway anymore. And the perceived, we call it the perceived effort. They're putting a lot of effort. They may be eating a lot more calories than they think at this point, but they're putting in a ton of effort. They're in this dieting mindset to where you just remove them from that. And they may eat a little bit more than they were, but you remove that dieting mindset and all of a sudden they can relax. Of course, it doesn't mean just go eat pizza and burgers and just, you know, without any regard to your caloric intake. You're using the RP method, which is what I really like it, because people get so fixated on those numbers, you know, the numbers on the scale, the numbers on their MyFitnessPal or whatever app that they're using. And you switch it to just focus on a good dietary pattern, what you're doing. And there's still some precision in there, but it's not so much precision that you're playing Tetris with your MyFitnessPal, you know, focusing on those detailed numbers.
Yes. Going in. So. In fairness, when I say I'm not counting anything, that's not totally true. The thing that fluctuates, my fats fluctuate a little bit. So I actually never know exactly how much fat I'm eating day to day because I'm allowed to have a variety of lean meats. The mm-hmm. only thing I'm aware of from whether I'm cutting or in maintenance or trying to build muscle is kind of these ancillary things. So the things I'm actually paying attention to are accessory fats and my total carbs. My total carbs are really the thing that move in broad strokes whether I'm losing weight, maintaining weight, or trying to build muscle. And so, but that is so easy to track, you know, like
yeah.
If it's you get one potato or two potatoes.
Yeah. Right. If you get used to that style of eat, I mean, the thing is most people eat just shit food. Like, so it's kind of hard for somebody sometimes to switch to that in the beginning because they're so used to eating whatever type of ultra processed foods. And it's like, yeah, technically you can eat those and still lose weight, but ideally we'd have you eating a more satiating dietary pattern while in the portions that will help you lose weight and obviously keep it off at one point. But then you get so used to that, then you can just, you're losing weight. And then all you have to do is adjust it up by, you know, a few hundred calories, depending on the person. It could be a little bit more, maybe a little bit less, but you just adjust it up by, like you said, you're having one potato as you're losing weight. Then all of a sudden you have two potatoes. And now the thing is what people do is they go, all right, I met my goal weight. Now I'm just going to go back to what I was doing before. And that's the recipe for weight regain. And you have to have some restraint while not feeling super restricted anymore. You get your energy back up, you get off the dieting mindset a little bit. And that's really the key to the maintenance.
Yeah. I don't know if my take is strictly anecdotal. It is probably strictly anecdotal, but I posit this as what other people go through too, which is not fully fleshed out or thought through, but this idea that once I get to my weight, whatever situation that I was experiencing that got me to the previous weight that I'm now working against will be resolved. And yeah, it's just a matter of weight loss. And it took me a good 15 plus years to actually go, you know, the act of losing weight is really pretty simple.
Right.
The other thing, how I got to be the weight that I didn't want to be, taking that apart, figuring out workarounds to going back to that, that's the whole solution. That's the entire game. Yeah. And I found that the only part of dieting that assisted that was maintenance. Yeah. 'Cause dieting has nothing to do with life. I mean, it's just like getting to a place. I don't know. It's like I can get to the gas station, but can I put fuel in the tank? What does it matter if you arrive to the gas station, but you have no money or you have no car to put gas in? Like, I don't know. It's one of these things where it really, and I don't even think it's the journey so much as with the dieting, but it's like, what are you going to change? How are you going to unwind all the bad habits or how are you going to solve whatever you were dealing with food or sedentary lifestyle or whatever it is? I don't know what necessarily, I don't think it's always the same for people, but something got us to this state that we want to change. That's really the most important thing to figure out, not doing again. So based on that, I've been running kind of scenarios in my head of like, well, what do you do in this situation? Because I think like if somebody is on a decent calorically restricted diet for a time period and then stalls and their adherence is 100%, because I've had that too. And it could even be a day or two of stalling where you're going like, no, I'm supposed to be losing a pound a day. This is crazy. Why am I plateauing? And then the diet would go like, well, have an apple day. And now you're only eating apples. And then sure enough, I lose my pound that day and I continue chucking along.
An apple day? What's an apple day?
An apple day is like literally, I was on a super low calorie diet and it literally had written like, if you don't lose weight one day, the next day you're only eating apples and you can eat as many as you want to break the plateau. No, there are these crazy like plateau busting things, but I have talked to people who, again, claim 100% adherence, but are saying they're in a plateau. And I think with something like keto, 100% adherence, for me, it's easy to plateau and not lose weight. I think that my suggestion in that case is like, well, you know, if you want to still be losing weight, you're probably just eating too much.
Yeah, too many calories, yeah.
But if you're on a low calorie diet and you hit a plateau, how do you even find maintenance, or what maintenance is supposed to be? Because I would assume all the processes have slowed down. Your metabolism might have slowed down. Adaptive thermogenesis, is that what it's called? Where
metabolic
thermogenesis adaptation, yeah. And you're not losing weight at the right rate. What does maintenance look like there?
Yeah, so I'll explain kind of what happens. All right, so metabolic adaptations, or adaptive thermogenesis, is usually what people think is where, you know, everybody's like, your metabolism is going to crash if you go on a low calorie diet or a lower calorie diet. That's why diets don't work. So let's say you're 300 pounds and you lose 100 pounds. You get down to 200 pounds, right? There's a prediction of how fast or how high your metabolism, or what your metabolism will be. Your basal metabolic rate will be at that 200 pounds. With somebody who loses weight, though, the predicted is a little bit higher than what it actually is. It seems to be that people that lose that much weight have a slower metabolism or basal metabolic rate than what would be predicted, and they call that the adaptive thermogenesis, or some metabolic adaptations. And it's in the range of 5 to 10%. The biggest loser, you know, my friend Kevin Hall, he's this brilliant physicist at the NIH. He's the one that kind of ran these with a few other really smart guys. And they found these biggest losers who just did crazy stuff to lose the weight. They had much higher metabolic adaptations. But for the most people that lose weight in a normal fashion, that's how it's supposed to be. It tends to be around this 5 to 10% slower metabolic rate than what would be predicted. So, you know, let's say your metabolic rate was supposed to be 2,000 calories a day, basal metabolic rate. It ends up being more like 1,900 or, you know, 1,800 at the lowest. So it's relevant, but even still, when they look at who maintains their weight loss, that's not necessarily predictive of who's going to regain the weight. So people that regain the weight tend to go back to their old habits, like you were saying before. So when people start on that very low calorie diet, though, and they feel that they're plateauing, and I define a plateau as like, it's really got to be more like 2 to 3 weeks where nothing's changing. Pounds on the scale, no ounces on the scale, no inches on the waist, anywhere, nothing. In those cases, most people have not adapted to that. So you do it. So as you lose weight, I just want to mention too, as you lose weight, your metabolic rate goes down no matter what. It doesn't matter if you're lifting weights and keeping your muscle. As you lose fat, your metabolic rate goes down. You have less mass on your body. Fat is actually metabolically active, not as much as muscle, but it still is. So no matter what, even if you kept all your muscle and only lost fat, your metabolic rate would go down just simply because you have less mass on your body. And then the metabolic adaptations are just slightly slower before. But what happens with these very low calorie diets is that most people, honestly, God, they will say they're sticking to it 100%. But physiologically, it's impossible. They would continue to lose weight if they were restricted from food. What happens is that, like I said kind of before, there's this kind of perceived effort, and they're not lying. People aren't lying necessarily, not intentionally. It's that we're not fed in labs. We're free living situations. There's subconsciously we get slightly bigger portions. There are things that maybe we don't remember eating. And again, it's not intentionally lying. So again, you have to look at the time frame. If it's just in a few days, and then you can have, you know, fluid fluctuations that can mask that change. But in like 3 to 4, if someone says they're eating 800 calories in 3 to 4 weeks, and they're like 250 pounds or 300 pounds, and they're not losing weight, they're just simply not eating. They're eating much more than that. And that doesn't mean they're a bad person or anything. It's just that, it's just physics. You wouldn't be able to, you can't hold on to mass when you're just not eating anything.
Yeah. I think when you talk about 2 or 3 weeks, I remember three or four days
going
by, and I would be utterly convinced I was on a plateau.
Yeah.
And that's when I would drop calories again, or take a meal out, or do an apple day, or one of these.
Those damn apple days, I swear.
Yeah. Yeah. and it would work, because I would then, you know, lose weight. Yeah. I would never make it 3 weeks. When I'm on a diet that is really painfully difficult, there's no way I'm making it 3 weeks with no change. Like, that's crazy, you know?
Right. So yeah, I mean, the thing is, the beautiful thing about your mindset now is my most successful patients, and including like you, you're not a patient, but very similar stories.
Yeah. An honorary patient.
Honorary patient. Yeah. You got this, you have this now body composition mindset, long-term mindset. You, I can tell, I mean, you talk about your shift in your mindset going like, I'm going to work on fitness too. I'm going to work on strength and muscle. The scale, I can tell the scale still bothers you once in a while. And that's completely normal. But when people shift that, you know, you had John Glaude on here, I don't know, a couple times maybe, but very similar mindset, shifting to fitness, shifting to body composition, not just scale weight, powerful things happen. So yeah, you over three days, that's frustrating. You're like, I'm busting my butt, but you know, defecation, you may be constipated. You may have stool in there. Maybe you worked out, maybe you started creatine, cellular shifts of fluid could just totally mask that. So that's why you really should get something like a happy scale. I like happy scale. I know we do it with our RP app too, but happy scale, if you're not using anything, it kind of, or Libra, if you're an Android user, it kind of evens out the fluctuation. So you're going every single day, but it kind of evens it out to where it shows the trend of your weight. So that over, you know, 2 or 3 weeks, you can see, like, if you're not losing weight over 2 or 3 weeks, and you have a lot of weight to lose, there's something up. But
is Happy Scale an app?
Yeah, Happy Scale is it's an Apple app, but I like it a lot. I have a lot of my patients use that when they're just trying to lose weight without like the RP app or a coach or something like that.
Yeah. Okay. I'm gonna look at that. I don't know this app, but that'll be fun to track.
Yeah.
I try to create a graph in my mind and go like 3 weeks ago and look at it, but this will be greater.
Get the app. I promise you, you'll like this a lot more. It smooths out all the fluctuations to where it takes the frustration out a little bit. At least you can see a trend. It works very well.
Yeah. And I don't want to encourage people to lose weight or because it's not real by reducing sodium. But I noticed that whenever I go deep into the hole with a diet, I start salting the shit out of my food. And that too can play a masking role, right?
Yep. 100%.
I had a conversation with Jared where I was like, dude, I am being 100% and nothing's budging. And he started talking to me about salt. And I was like, oh my God, I'm eating many grams of salt a day. And he was like, okay, let's reduce that. And then, you know, a few days later, there was like a purge of water. But then I was like, I want to hold on to this purge. And I stopped eating salt altogether. And I started getting lightheaded. And it was like, it's a whole thing. I'm not saying like
classic.
Yeah. But like, that can be a thing. Like you start to lose some sensation with your food because it's a less quantity. And so you try to increase that sensation with other places like flavor or salt or whatever. And that can be a thing too. So if a guy, so basically my suggestion has always been, if you are going to do a maintenance period, Google a BMI, not BMI.
BMR calculator.
BMR calculator. Yeah.
Total. You really want a TDEE calculator, total daily energy expenditure calculator. I'm actually working on a project right now going through all this stuff, but you can use the NIH body planner. That's my buddy, Kevin Hall. He designed this thing. It's kind of correlated to his, a lot of his studies that he's done, but that'll give you a base for it. Now, the thing is, I tell everybody, you do these calculators, they're an estimate.
Right.
The basal metabolic rate calculators are generally within like 10% accuracy. The problem is when you start doing the total daily energy expenditure, a lot of us,
I always think I'm lying. I always think I'm lying. I'm always like, I'm the most active guy ever. And then I'm getting like 3,000 steps a day average or something. Like I know. That.
So you got, there's an activity calculator, 'cause then it multiplies it by your basal metabolic rate. And, I don't know. Like, yeah. So guys that are like power lifters, like, yeah, I work out every single day, but then you're at like a sedentary office job. You're probably light sedentary. You got to make sure. So this place is a good place to start with an estimate. But in general though, like I always tell people, it's usually go up by a couple hundred calories for we could talk about how long you should diet. I mean, in general, 6 months is like the longest I generally have people do. I have those with a lot more, sometimes lose longer. 6 months is the longest, but in general, we like stopping at around, 8 to 12 weeks. 12 weeks is pretty good. Go for 12 weeks of maintenance. And that makes it a lot longer process. So for someone like you, when you're in your journey, that probably, I think that probably would have been too short. Because I know that would have been frustrating for you in the beginning.
Well, look, here's the deal. Would it have been frustrating? 1,000,000%. But it took me 15 years to even find a plan that actually had gains that never went the other way. Did you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I agree. And it would have just been a convincing you of that. Because John said the same thing. A lot of my patients say the same thing. I wish I would have done this like this. And I'm like, yeah, I think hindsight's always 20/20. And
yeah,
if you were a robot and I could program you and just say, look, this is going to be a 2-year process. You'd have been like, fuck you. I'm gone. I want this in 6 months. Maybe, I don't know. Maybe I could have convinced you. Maybe I could have convinced you, but
I don't, like, I think the only way, and look again, like this is what I think is the best. I'm not saying anybody has to do this. It's completely up to you. But I will say that I went through everything you can go through in dieting, other than having like my stomach size reduced through surgery. That's the only thing I didn't do. Everything else I've done, and everything else was a lot more of a struggle. The biggest relief to me was like relaxing into the idea that this is nothing is going to be changed immediately.
Yeah.
It's all a very long, drawn out, this whole fucking thing, lifestyle, what a cringy word, lifestyle, and like mindfulness. I hate these words.
You're in LA.
You're surrounded by it. Yeah. I'm surrounded by the idea of like lifestyle means, going to have a tea elixir and doing yoga. And I'm like,
going to Whole Foods.
Yeah. None of that is for me. I'm not doing any of that. No. Or like, there's a restaurant where like you tip by having like positive thoughts or something like that. Everybody pays whatever they feel like the meal's worth, and everything's named like positivity and light and enhancement. And I'm like, yuck, I don't want any of that crap. I want somebody to like, tell me I'm a fucking asshole and then throw my steak on the table. That's what I want, and that's what makes me feel good. But the reality is, it is lifestyle and it is mindfulness and all these things, if used in a non-cringy, like hippy-dippy way, that's Kumbaya. The way to do it. Yeah. I mean, that's the whole game.
I'm with you.
Yeah.
I'm with you. That stuff is so cringy. Yeah. I mean, the good thing is we're doing this podcast. I hope there are people listening going, I know there are people listening because I get messages about your podcast all the time. I found you on podcast. So there are people right now that have 100, 200 pounds, 300, I don't know how many 100 pounds that they have to lose. Think about this. Think about all the ways you've dieted and they failed. Now, if you can just understand this long-term mindset that Ethan's talking about, that's finally helped him get success. This is what helped. I don't know any of my patients that, that don't kind of do this now. So, if you can figure this out and understand, you know, 3-6 months, in the beginning, 6 months at the longest I would take, and then really just take a good maintenance. And again, maintenance is going to be a few hundred calories, could be up to 500 calories, could be a little bit more depending on how much you're working out too. And just hold on there for, we tend to say as long as you've dieted, but for someone that went 6 months, I wouldn't have the maintenance for like 6 months, probably less than that, but work on your strength, get back feeling good, and then go at it again, really holding on to that muscle, working on your fitness. That's a general recommendation.
Yeah. Okay. One of the other things about this that I want to talk to you about is, the idea of community. And like, you are a perfect guy because just you creates a community. Community is just more than one person. So somebody goes to see you, becomes a part of your practice. There's their community. They can communicate with you and it's not just them in their head. One of the other things that has tripped me up over the years is just that at times where I'm just figuring out shit for myself and going, yeah, that makes sense. I'm just going to do that. I have not been super successful because I quite often will make a decision with a plan and then at some point talk myself out of that plan. And then I'll have my wife going like, you know, hey, what happened to your plan? And I'm like, no, I have a new plan. And I find that with guys like you, it's good to have somebody who's almost a place of authority or something like that, where they can be a sounding board, but also like, hey, I see what's happening. I get it. Let's get back on track over here. For people who cannot necessarily afford you or a program like that, is there a way for people to just have this with a spouse or have this with a friend or team up with somebody and go about it that way?
Yeah. You know, okay. So it's hard because family and friends can be sabotage. They can sabotage you.
Yeah. I think that's true. Yes.
Not intentionally. So you have to have what I'd call it a crucial conversation. There's this book called Crucial Conversations where, you know, what to do when shit hits the fan. And you have to have like kind of a heart to heart saying, you know what, I really have this goal. If I could have you on my team, absolutely. The spouse should be on board. Now, ideally the spouse kind of changes their lifestyle with you. There can be this ripple effect. What we see in like studies where one spouse will go into a program and the other spouse just by proxy will start losing weight a little bit just because. So, but ideally you would have your spouse on board. But I so many times I've had patients be like, nope, my spouse wants to keep these foods in the house because of the kids. It's like, why are you keeping that shit in the house anyway? And I know the kids are screaming, they want this stuff, but that stuff resolves quickly. When you don't have it, you don't have it in the house. So like, and you just, I can't have this stuff in the house. If it's around, I'm going to eat it. That's what the food is, addictive, like whatever you want to call it. So we're drawn to that food. So if you can get the spouse on board, you're cooking together, or she or you are making the food, you guys have the similar plan together, goes a very long way. If you don't have a spouse, whatever, partner, doesn't matter. A friend, a workout partner would be great. You see places like CrossFit. The reason CrossFit did so well is because of their little boxes that everybody starts cheering each other on. They keep you accountable. They start calling you if you start missing the workouts. And then a lot of them help with nutrition too. It may not be the greatest nutrition, but it's something oftentimes. So yeah, I'm actually been trying to figure out a way to somehow make this affordable. We have our apps obviously, but it's artificial intelligence, you know? So it's not an actual
No, but person. That's a good point. The apps are, I think the apps can act like that because the apps are also objective, right? The apps are only using the data you're giving them. So if the app starts spitting back feedback that is like, well, this isn't what I want, then you just go like, okay, I'm messing up somewhere. I think apps are pretty good, and they're inexpensive too.
They definitely have their spot. I mean, ideally, you know, if you're struggling, you'd have someone to talk to. You know, we have our coaches, but again, not affordable for everybody. I used to just take insurance in a clinic, so anybody could have seen me. I don't do that anymore, and doctors are kind of rushed now. If you go to see a regular doctor, like, what are you here for? They're not even looking to pass the computer screen. They're typing stuff. And
honestly, who knows what you're going to get from a doctor now? No. One doctor could say go carnivore. Another could say go vegan. And, you know, I think mostly they say just eat a balanced diet, I would think.
Yeah. But it means, it means nothing. Right. It's pretty bad out there. Right. There's obesity. So I do want to give a shout out. There's, I'm an obesity certified specialist. There's a website, abom.org. At least, you know, they went through some process to get obesity certified. I can attest to, you can get all sorts of specialists who are just horrible. So like, I can't say that they're going to be great, but they're probably going to be better than your general family doctor, internist in the clinic. So yeah, there are options. There are options out there. There are little support groups too. You can find on Facebook. There's some great free Facebook support groups. Some, if you ask like a newbie question, they can attack you, but other ones are very supportive. So you're going to have to, if you go and search, you could find some really nice ones out there.
Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. Speaking of that, I did a thing on something called Marco Polo's Channels, which out of that grew a Facebook support group, and I think it's called Ethan Suplee's Fail Better Facebook. I don't have Facebook, so I'm never on it. So nice. I've never been on it, but I know a bunch of the folks that were doing this started a support group. And I they were all super, super nice. And all doing different diets, just like helping each other out by communicating. So if you want to go check that out too, you can check that out.
Perfect. Yeah. Awesome. Something like that. That's what I would say is a great idea. Community is actually very important. It's hard to do it by yourself. I mean, some people do obviously, but that's also part of the whole environment thing that drives us to regain weight.
Yeah. I think community can be daunting in a number of ways. Like, I have a little part of me that's like, I'm a dude and I'm tough and I'm going to do it on my own. And then I have another part of me where I'm like, I don't know what the fuck I'm doing. I need to talk to somebody about this, or I need to read a book and then work on it in my head 1,000 times and still not be totally sure of what I'm doing. But there's OA, Overeaters Anonymous, and there's and I think that the thing to realize, being a sober person and also trying to white knuckle sobriety at times, is that in these groups, I would say 99.9% of the people have been through what you've been through and are really just there to be of service and also have you as a part of a larger whole that strengthens them. And so there's nothing to be daunted about checking out one of these groups. If for one second you think, I'd like to talk to somebody who, you know, a lot of times our spouses aren't really aware of what this is. You know what I mean? My wife never had to deal with being overweight like I did. She does like a few pounds here or there, and that's a big deal for her. I'm not taking that away and making nothing of it, but it's not the same. But I say that, and I say even her, she has like a little group with her friends where they're checking in and they're all doing some plan together and you know, talking about maintenance too. So she has her version of that. But I think that's really cool. I think going back to maintenance, that let's talk through again about the benefits of this, because you say 12 weeks of dieting, 12 weeks of maintenance. This is going to really send some people into a headspin, because you're presumably doubling at the minimum, whatever they're looking at. And it's that, but I also want to say, if somebody has been in a severe calorie restriction, and they're going like, I should do a maintenance. This is making sense to me. I should do that right now. Do they just do the calculation and then shoot 10% lower?
Yeah, that's a good question. They could absolutely do that. You told me this when we first started chatting, when you started Dr. Israetel's plan. When people go from a very low calorie diet, so they may be on an 800,000 or whatever, 1,000 calorie diet and just drinking shakes all day. Again, that's fine. That's one of the tools we use in obesity. A fast weight loss in the beginning can be very helpful for long-term weight loss. When they go up to maintenance, they're going to gain right away 5 or so pounds. It's fluid. It's glycogen. So I do want to make sure everybody understands that. You experienced that when we chatted. I remember.
I experienced that every time I go.
Yeah. And every
and
time.
You're always a bummer.
Yeah. You're like, what the hell is this? It can be a mind trip a little bit. So I want to make sure everybody knows that will happen. Do not be scared. It will happen. The key is does it slowly start increasing more and more and more? And you got to have some sort of buffer in there to go, all right, I'm clearly eating more than what my maintenance is now. So you can calculate it. The thing is, when you're at that very low calorie level, going up just by a couple hundred calories per day is that's not going up to main or like a week. Usually people do it. We go like a couple hundred calories to 400 calories and then see what you do over the course of a couple of weeks. That's not going to be enough to get you to maintenance. You could trial that, but it's going to take you a while if you're on a very low calorie diet. So doing the calculation is a way to do it. Sometimes I just set people up with like, all right, add 600 calories to what you're doing right now. If they're on a very low calorie diet, and then see how they do, they'll gain that 5 pounds. And if they're kind of stable, still feeling hungry, we'll increase it by another couple hundred calories per week until we make sure that they don't gain like 10 pounds then. And you'll feel better. Energy will come up. Libido will start increasing. You know, some people experience some like erectile dysfunction and stuff like that. Women, their periods may be off slightly. But once you start increasing the calories, you get to maintenance, you're just going to feel a lot better. You're going to know. And as long as you don't see that scale continuing to just go up, you'll see that 5 or so pounds initially, but you shouldn't continue to see it go up. That's the key.
So this is one of the hardest things too.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
I guess understanding the difference between, you know, look, I guess it's all weight gain, but the difference between water and fat. Yeah. Like, I've talked to friends who are like, I gained 10 pounds on Christmas Day. And I'm like, okay, then did you just go back to your thing and it went away? And yeah. they're like, no, because that was enough to derail me. 10 yeah. pounds, I gave up. And I'm like, there's no way you gain 10 pounds of fat in a day. It's not, I mean, I can't, that's 35,000 calories
yeah, yeah.
that possible. I don't think your body could process in a day. You just no. make yourself sick. So could we talk about that for a minute too? Because I think a lot of the areas where I'm really set up to succeed now due to long drawn out maintenance periods are things like holidays or the few, I mean, very few times a year that I just go like, I'm going to eat a pizza.
Yeah.
That weight gain or that spike that you might experience the next day or Thai food. Thai food gets me every time because I think
what's your favorite Thai food? What's your go-to?
Jitlada on Sunset. It's incredible, dude. It's incredible. And especially when my kids come home, they all go to school in different states. When they come home, that's their thing. And they're like, when are we eating jitlada? And I'm like, oh God, we got to do this again. But then I love it. but I won't get on the scale the next day because I yeah. know it's going to be like shockingly different.
Yeah.
But I also know now that's not fat. So it's not going to, I'm not going to, if I do get on the scale and I see it, it's almost like funny, not really.
Yeah, but like, this isn't actually that funny.
Yeah. It's so weird because I can see it from like four different points of view where I'm like, one point of view is like, my life is over. Another point of view is like, God damn, I can hold a lot of water. And then another one is like, this is a real reason to get to be 100% diligent today. And then there's another voice that's like, give up. That's it. Yeah. You're done. You don't have to do this.
I call it the all or nothing mentality. You know, like, you know, if it was a planned, we call it like a planned deviation. Some people call it cheat meal. I don't like to use that. Like a planned deviation from what you're usually eating, you know, just you do that. Some people use the popped tire analogy where it's like you popped one tire. It would be like popping the rest of your tires, just giving up.
I've done that. I've done shit yeah. like that. Yeah.
All or nothing mentality, whatever. We don't get 100% in a class or a 0% in a class. We, you know, get A's, B's, C's kind of in between there. So it's kind of a spectrum. So I'd have people who are listening to this going like, look, you're going to have a deviation from your usual meal plan. You're going to gain, you could gain anywhere 5-10 pounds. Yeah. It's possible. Wrestlers who cut weight. We used to see it all the time. Same kind of thing. It was like, holy cow, that salt, you know, holding glycogen in your muscles from carbs, salt, in fluid in the rest of your tissues. It's possible. So then you go back to your usual eating pattern, but slightly higher calories. And, you know, like you said, the salt, changes, fluid will start coming off. That's why the happy scale and just continuing to monitor. It's a long-term process. One meal isn't going to make or break. One day isn't going to make or break your whole diet. Like you said, it's, I don't know anybody that's eaten 35,000 calories in a day. I mean, I think I might've eaten like, I don't know how many. I can imagine maybe I've gotten up to the 6,000 or 8,000 calorie range.
For sure. I remember when Michael Phelps was talking about 10,000 a day. And
hard
I was
to know like, if it's true or not. I have no idea.
Yeah, it seemed like a lot. But even when you went through everything he ate, and I was 450 at the time, I think, or 400. And I was like, I don't eat that much. That's crazy yeah. when they went through what he eats in a day.
Yeah. The I think that might have been a McDonald's might have been an ad for McDonald's. I'm not sure. It was like a bunch of McMuffins or something.
Yeah. And pancakes and bacon and it was just like the dude eats like a little kid who's been starving and then released at, you know, the Cheesecake Factory. That's what it sounds like his diet is. But he's also swimming all day long, so he's burning a lot of that. But I don't know about 10,000 calories, but that's what I'm saying. Like, that's not even a third of what you need to gain 10 pounds in a day.
Right. Yeah. Think of it. Yeah. Don't think of it as fat. Just think of it as fluid. You're going to, you know, maybe you do this, what you did. Don't jump on the scale the next day. Just understand it's probably up. But if you do know that it's fluid and watch it over the course of the week, go back to what you're doing before.
But now again, holiday seasons come and you and yeah. you wind up taking 2 weeks totally off with this kind of wanton attitude towards food, and you're just like, I mean, honestly, the most lascivious memes are yours, so I know you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
And you're doing stuff like that, and that could be that you could put on, you could do some damage, I think, in a few weeks. But even if it's just like a few meals over the course of a few weeks, I don't think it's that damaging.
No, that's people need to think of weekly energy balance instead of daily energy balance or meal energy balance. Like, who get like in the grand scheme of things, when it averages out over a week, yeah. If you just said screw it and you ate pizza every single day with burgers every single day, yeah, you just undid a lot of process that you did. But if it's just a meal a few times in a week during the holiday seasons, you're going to see a fluctuation due to salt and whatever, but very minimal fat, not much at all.
Yeah. I know that when I tried for a moment to do the 4-hour body, I think that's what it was called. Yeah. And he introduced me to, and it was like a kind of a mild diet, to be honest with you. It wasn't super hardcore. And then it was like, and Saturday you go to town. I could ruin the week on a Saturday easily, but I wasn't gaining weight. It was almost a weird version of maintenance just because I was like, why isn't this working? I'm doing exactly what the guy said. And then I started to gain weight a little bit and I was like, forget, this is a waste of time.
I'm trying to get a book deal. I want to make an anti-fad diet book. I'm so sick of the just bullshit out there. So yeah, that's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Eat whatever you want
in a day. And then I went down to a meal, but even that meal, I would hyper-visualize it all week and I would wind up eating so much that I would make myself sick. Like if my wife wanted to do anything Saturday night after dinner, there was no chance because I was like damaging myself. I was like, I'm going to get a pizza from this place and a couple cheeseburgers from this place.
Yep.
And there was a place in Eagle Rock that would put pastrami on a cheeseburger. And I was like, definitely going there. And I would do this. And then I would try to eat as much of, and it just became really disgusting. The one meal still was better than the whole day. Cause you know, I could do less damage in a single meal than I could over the course of the day, but it still didn't, it didn't work out in the long haul.
It didn't boost your metabolism.
No,
I'm sure they probably said something about, oh, it's going to boost your leptin. It's going to do this. And it just doesn't matter. Like that's why I'm so sick of this crap out there.
Yeah. I think that when I think about the little fine tuning stuff, I'm like, okay, if you're at a point where you're like, my only problem is that my cow wasn't super happy during its lifetime and the energy is now having some adverse effect on me. If that's it, like if everything else is fine, but like the cow's energy is throwing you off, or, you know, the bone meal that's being used to plant your tomatoes is not of a pastured nature, or you want to make sure that none of the small critters that normally are killed during vegetable agriculture, or, you know, something like this, everything's hydroponic, no bugs are getting in there, so we're not killing any other life forms in our vegan diet. I'm like, okay, but I hope everything else is fine at that point. You know what I mean? Like if you're trying to solve, if you're 400 pounds and you're trying to solve that by like making sure that the cows are, and I'm not saying cows should be, listen, I'm not saying that all of our factory farms are good.
I hate cows.
I listen, I love to eat them. And I'm just saying there's got to be at some point, we've got to like go, what are we trying to solve here? You know, is it an ethical matter? Is it a moral issue where we're looking at this? Like, those are two different things in my opinion. Or am I trying to handle the fact that I'm 400 pounds or in my case, 550? Like, I just think at some point the goal or the thing that you're going like, oh, well, this is the issue. Maybe dig a little more. Maybe there's another issue that you got to deal with too, you know?
Yeah. 100%. No, I'm with you, man.
And okay. So back to maintenance one more time. We've talked about if you're in a severe caloric deficit that you bump it up and come out of it maybe gradually because it can be startling. We've talked about 5 pounds in glycogen. Those are good to know.
Can be more. The key would be like, you're going to see a bump, but then that bump over the course of like 3 to 4 weeks shouldn't keep going up.
Right.
It should be kind of a little bump. And then as you keep increasing, if you're increasing your calories and whatever, and you start seeing a slow gradual increase, that's where you go, okay, maybe I need to stop for a second.
Right. And what about the time? What is the deal with the time where you say, like, if you've been dieting for 12 weeks, you should do 12 weeks of maintenance?
So it really depends. So this is where I kind of deviate from like the RP, you know, despite being an RP doctor, I deviate with my patients with obesity because like really like it could be 3 to 6 months. They would say, don't go past three months, 12 weeks or so. I would say 3 to 6 months if you have a lot of weight to lose. And then if you've been dieting for 6 months, I think it's fine to take, I wouldn't take 6 months at maintenance. I would take 2 to 3 months if you have a lot of weight to lose. And a lot of weight to lose is in that.
Oh, you're saying pounds. They can diet for 3 to 6 months, not maintenance diet, for 3 to 6 months.
Diet for 3 to 6 months. And then I would probably maintenance for 3 months and then go at it again. Really focusing though, like you said, on if I could get everybody to resistance train, I think that's going to make a huge difference in weight loss maintenance. The studies, you know, they're not a slam dunk, but it makes sense physiologically. You're gaining muscle. You have more muscle to then move, while you're working out or just during your normal daily activities, which then changes what we call this energy gap. You can eat more calories. You have more of a, tissue to then shuttle your glucose to and put glycogen into and use it for fuel. So it makes sense physiologically in multiple avenues, but 3 to 6 months, take 3 months off, not off, but maintenance. Practice keeping that scale weight within like that 10 pound buffer range, 5 to 10 pounds, focus on strength. Then again, after 3 months, take three months, depending on how much weight you have to lose, 3, maybe 6 months at the most, if you have, again, still a lot of weight to lose. And then again, take it off. And then eventually you're going to get to a point where you're like, you know what, your goal may be to get even leaner, but it's just too miserable to do it from hunger standpoint. And, you know, it's something between you and your doctor, but metabolically, if you're really healthy, it may not be worth trying to get much leaner unless, you know, you have physique goals like you. And sometimes I add medicines if the hunger is just so bad, but like, that's where you get into. You focus on your fitness, focus on maintenance. You start working on different goals. But yeah. Three months or so.
Is there any rule about, I've looked at all the charts of like the BMI, which I'm overweight still, unfortunately.
So am I, according to the BMI. So it's all right.
Right. And you're very lean. As long as I've known you, you've been very lean. You hold that lean state.
Yeah. I hold it pretty well. Yeah.
Is there any kind of a rule for how a person figures out how naturally lean their genetics are predisposed to keep them?
Yeah, it's a good question. So my brother, I always talk about, he had abs in utero.
Yes, he's very lean too. I've seen
him eat a lot. He eats, I don't know, I swear he eats as much as I do. He may not actually eat as much. I do eat a lot, but he eats a lot and he stays ripped year round. I mean, you can see him eating ice cream and nuts, but he eats a lot of vegetables and salmon. You know, you can see some of his meals that he must make up for those other times he eats like tons of snacks and whatever. But some of that is what we could like primordial prevention. Like we were very active, very lean. We had, you know, favorable genetics, but like he was lifting weights at like 5 years old. So like some of that was programmed from earlier. I like Yoni Friedhoff. He's an obesity specialist doctor up in Canada. He talks about, and I agree with him, what's your best weight? There's no ideal weight. Forget the ideal weight. There's no ideal weight. There's nothing out there. Like, you have a lot of muscle now. Like, your weight is above your technical ideal weight. You'll never reach what's deemed an ideal weight. I will never reach what's considered an ideal weight. I never will, despite, you know, being pretty lean.
Just to get into the, by the way, when I was doing 8 hours a day of cardio and starving myself, I wasn't anywhere near my ideal weight. Like using the BMI as a indication of ideal weight for me, I got rid of that a long time ago because it was, I went and saw Dr. Huizenga, who was the doctor on The Biggest Loser at one point 10 or more years ago. And he weighed me and he was like, you got a lot of weight to lose. And I was like, what do you mean? I've been killing myself. And he said, no, you need to be way down here. And then he dexed me and he came out shocked. And he was like, you don't have to lose any more weight. But like the gross number immediately, his go-to was, you need to lose a bunch more weight. We're going to put you on a plan.
I don't know even what kind of specialist he is, but that's why you're not like the BMI is strictly supposed to be used as a screening tool. That's super simple calculation. You got the fitness people will say, throw out the BMI completely. Cause most people that are into fitness, they're going to have more muscle and they're going to be in that, you know, maybe overweight to class one obesity range. With the BMI, most people that have some muscle, they're going to be in that overweight range just because. So fitness people don't like it, or I should say bodybuilder fit physique type of people, not necessarily like runners. Runners will have a lower BMI, but and then you got like the health at every size crowd. They'll be like, BMI is completely inaccurate. It's like, no, on a population level, it's pretty good. As a doctor, it's okay to screen somebody, but you should absolutely look at the individual in front of you and decide, do they have muscularity? Do they have a decent amount of muscle? Maybe it's not so accurate. That's where you start using a waist circumference and you can see if there's where they're storing fat or where they're storing their weight. So if you came in, your legs are pretty lean. We could have done a waist circumference. And then before saying anything, it would have been good to do a DEXA, but you don't have to even do a DEXA. You could do a waist circumference and then look at somebody's labs and go like, yeah, I don't, how do you feel? Are you hungry? Are you miserable? Do you have a libido? Like I said before, like if you're, maybe you need to gain some weight because your libido is so low, or you have blood sugar issues, blood pressure, then maybe we should continue to try to lose weight. All those things need to take those play a role. So there's no like ideal weight. We all come in different shapes and sizes and we have different set points for where our bodies want us to be and settling points, depending on where our environment is. You know, somebody that lives on an island where they have to go basically fish for their food and gather their berries, they're going to be lighter no matter what. It doesn't matter what their genetics are versus that same person in like an urban area. Surrounded by a lot of yummy foods. What's that Thai place you like? Yeah, they're going to that Thai place.
Yeah.
So, you know, something like that. But yeah, the doctor should not be saying, hey, you have a lot of weight to lose based on some ideal. There is no ideal. If they say that, they're just lying and they don't understand obesity.
Yeah. I think there's all this, you know, it's a mess in my head too, but it's like, I pick an arbitrary number and I aim for that arbitrary number and everything is about this number. And then I still get to that number and want to keep losing. And so, and so there's no, I've had a number of times where I'm like, I have no idea. I don't know about what if a number is or a pant size or like, how I feel, how does that play a factor? What I should be, I don't know what, like none of this. It's just, so the easiest metric is a number. Like, and I've been talking to somebody recently who has this, like, they must hit this number. And a lot of it is about the BMI where they're like, I just want to be at the top. And honestly, this person is basing it on whether they are some days a half an inch taller than other days. So they're taking the lower number and going like, nope, I'm going to say just for honesty's sake that I'm shorter than I typically am. Yeah. And I need to get into that bracket. And I'm like, why?
Yeah. It means nothing.
Yeah.
The patients will be like, I want to be this way. And I'm like, why? Well, because that would be my BMI, or that's what I was in high school. I'm like, who gives a shit, man? Like,
well, and also like, if it's something about high school, it's like, what was your muscular build in high school? I imagine that was different. I was much heavier in high school. Well, maybe not. I mean, I quit high school at 14, but I know that I know that life wasn't the effort that it has become, you know, and yeah. I think there's a lot of different factors in that, but I in high school had a lot more energy than I do now. So I just think my composition was different, even though I was covered up with a lot of fat still. But yeah, the numbers game, I think it's an interesting tool specifically for progress and to track progress. But at the end of the day, these numbers are meaningless. I think a pair of pants is a more meaningful goal than a number. Yeah, what if you reasonable. get into the pants and it's like, this is awesome and I feel great, and you get on a scale and you're like, but I need to lose 3 more pounds. It's like, who cares?
Yeah, what? That makes no sense. If you feel good, you feel comfortable, you got energy, your labs are looking good, what the hell?
Yeah. And we can kind of, have you ever started somebody on a diet with maintenance? Have you ever said the first thing we're going to do is maintenance?
Yeah. So these are the people that are chronic. So I get these chronic dieters that come to me. These are the patients, the women that have irregular periods. These are the guys with low testosterone due to excess dieting, ironically. So sometimes you can have it from obesity. There's all sorts of causes of low testosterone, but I get a lot of guys with secondary hypogonadism. It's secondary to their chronic dieting, and they're too thin almost. They're fasting too much. They're just, their testosterone's like 200 or something. I'm like, hey man, let's actually like bump up your calories. And all of a sudden their testosterone goes up to the 500s and they feel great. So yeah, women, their periods come back. Not always, unfortunately, but that's the diet culture thing. So, you know, there's people that think dieting's bad because of diet culture. Well, dieting's not bad. It just needs to be done for the right person and in the proper manner, with the risks and benefits, the harms and benefits discussed. But, you know, yeah, there are chronic dieters that absolutely need to go. You need to stop dieting, like psychologically, physiologically, everything. Stop dieting. And we take them to maintenance, and then we work on their fitness. Other people who've been trying to lose weight for a long time and they feel frustrated. You know, again, I'm not going to tell them they're lying about their calorie intake, but we go, let's just take the focus off the scale. Like it's driving you nuts. I don't know. Like I can't confirm, but I bet the house that you're eating a lot more than you think you are, even though you say you're eating 1200 calories, but whatever, let's stop dieting, you know, eat a healthful dietary pattern, but let's focus on getting stronger, working on your fitness.
Had a friend who started counting calories because at one point I said, like, I'm really figuring out, because I'd never thought about calories, or I hadn't thought about calories as an adult ever. And then I was like, I'm going to look at this. What is this? I'm figuring everything out. Everything's getting weighed and measured and all of this. And it was honestly a bit of a nightmare at first. And I was right. I didn't know about the apps. I was writing everything down, and then I would come up with a figure that was always off, and I had to redo my math multiple times. And then I had a friend who was like, I'm going to do that too. And everything was eyeballed. And I was like, I don't know that you're really doing that. I can't intuit how many calories are in that without weighing it. I probably could now, but even with like a cup of rice that I would scoop myself, I would then have to weigh it, because I could cram a lot more rice into that cup than is 40 grams of carbs worth, or 200 calories, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The I had a patient that said they're eating 1200 calories, and then I was looking at their food logs, and it was like some Stouffer's lasagna. And I was like, how do you know how much you had? They're like, well, I don't know. I just put it in the thing. I'm like, you're eating twice as much as you think you are. I guarantee it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's tough. I don't hate the idea of counting calories, but I you know, the surprise to me at what a measured tablespoon of olive oil is when I had been eyeballing it for a long time.
Yeah.
It's a big difference. I could easily have been eating a quarter cup of olive oil on a salad. And then there's a little left over. So I'm going, well, I didn't even get my tablespoon, you know, because there's some in the bottom of the bowl. And meanwhile, the salad was closer to a soup than a salad. It's tough. I do like the way I'm doing it now because it's all been working for the past year. And the only thing I'm really counting is carbs and a little bit of fats, but not even so much that I'm tracking that. And tracking carbs is really pretty simple.
Right. As long as you're not going for, you know, that's the thing. It's like if they're pretty simple, straightforward carb sources, not going for like Pop-Tarts or whatever. You know?
Yes. No, I don't really mess with that. I guess it becomes, you know, we're talking about this, and that's the other thing that we have to take into consideration with as we're talking about it is the nuance of the way somebody else eats. I can have no idea. I would never eat a Pop-Tart ever. I would never buy a Pop-Tart. I would never eat a Pop-Tart. That's not something I'm interested in eating. I don't see the benefit in a Pop-Tart. I also didn't like Pop-Tarts as a kid, in fairness.
Yeah, so they're okay. I don't know.
Just that, but this is like all my preference falls into it too. I eat potatoes. I eat rice. I eat bread. Like those are tend to be my carb sources, you know? Mm-hmm. And those are all really easy to figure out. Pasta, a cup of pasta is very easy to measure.
Yep.
You know, and it's also easy to cheat if I'm cramming it into a cup.
Or if you just pile it on your plate.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Man, you can do a lot of damage with that. Amazing. Dr. Nadolski, thank you so much. I really think I couldn't advocate for maintenance more. And again, I would never say like, you'll never make it without maintenance. I don't think that's true. I think people can do whatever, but I find it to be such an easy thing that has helped me so much that I really want to share with people.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think everybody, if they get into that mindset like you're doing, they're going to be that much more successful.
Yeah. And the, you know, the other thing I think about is if I think about my goals, I want it to be long-term, right? Long-term is long-term. So whether I get to whatever I'm going to be tomorrow and then have that forever, or it takes me a little longer, but I have it forever, I want it forever. And the idea that I'm going to make such radical changes to my behavioral lifestyle overnight or in the course of doing something that's really different than the way I plan on living, I feel like it's counterintuitive. So it's an easy sale in that aspect.
Yeah, I completely agree.
Yeah. All right, cool. Thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, anytime, man. Of course, we got to hang out before I leave.
Yes, you're leaving in August?
August, yeah.
All right, we'll do it for sure. I'll come to you. I owe you a trip.
All right, you better get your ass here.
All right, thank you.
All right, see you, man.
Bye. And now for the Q&A. Jared has a question for you. Hi, Jared. Dude, you're killing it. This is awesome.
I say all of this to ask if it's crazy for me to do a PPL split. I used to lift and had success, but went on a 7-year maintenance. I just didn't know if I had to do full body since I took a long vacation.
No, dude. PPL split is a great way to exercise. You don't have to. You don't have to ease into it by doing full bro workouts.
Will you say what a PPL split is for people like me?
Push pull legs.
Oh, yeah.
I've lately been doing legs push pull, and will often do push legs pull. But any way you shake it up, I found that some of the back work I would do would actually lessen my ability to lift heavy legs. So, but I found that the legs workout had no effect on my back at all. So that makes sense. This is meaningless to you, but he'll know what I'm saying. However you want to arrange it, there's nothing wrong. You don't have to, I mean, like, don't hurt yourself. Don't do anything, you know, use principles of progressive overload and all of that. But yeah, you should be fine. And it sounds like you are making a really positive and healthy change in your life. So I commend you, and I say go to the gym and have fun. Thank you for the question. I'm sorry the dog was barking, so I was trying to pause around it, but there's no help. There's no saving this. If you have a question you would like me to answer on this podcast, please submit it to AmericanGlutton.net.
Thanks for listening to this episode of American Glutton. I'm Ethan Suplee, and as always, joined by my chaperone, Paige Dorian. Follow us on Instagram at American Glutton Podcast. Sincerely.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.